This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I want to thank each and every one of you for coming back week after week and listening to this podcast. And thank you also for sharing the word and letting other people know about this podcast as well. If you have not subscribed to the pod letter, then please do so this way that you can find out who's going to be on from week to week, who's going to be coming up next week, and also suggestions from the archives. But one thing that you could really do to help us with this podcast to let other people know about it is to give a 5-star rating in the iTunes store. If you could just go to there and give us again, 5-star rating and nice comments, then it will help our podcast grow. And this is something that takes very little of your time, but will help us immensely. So if you get a chance, please go and do that. That will help us out. Well, this week we're going to be traveling to Minneapolis, Minnesota, up in the cold northern part of the country. Well, I say that because it's certainly colder there than it is down here in Houston. And we're going to visit with a good friend of mine, Suzanne the Magician. Suzanne is someone who is a winner of the Academy of Magical Arts Close-Up Magician of the Year. And she has been around for quite a while, doing a lot of restaurant magic, and is just an excellent magician. And if you've not had a chance to actually watch her perform, be sure and go to the Magic Word Podcast. And there you will see a video which you can learn a little bit more about her, see her show, and also some other things that we put in the podcast blog, some photos and some of the words that we put in there. Just, I spend a lot of time basically working on the blog, and so I encourage you, if you get a chance, please take some time and go and check that out. Something else, by the way, that we've been doing for a couple of weeks now, and that is of actually doing a video kind of to complement this podcast, the audio podcast. I always think, of course, of podcasts as being an audible thing where people can listen to it when you're in a commute in your car, or you're at the gym, or you're walking your dog, or you're outside, whatever, you're listening to it on your headphones, but not necessarily watching it. Well, we've decided to try a little experiment and do a few of these podcasts in the real world, that is, I should say, the video world, where you can actually see the expressions of both the guest and myself. And so we're going to be doing this for a few weeks just to kind of test it out and see if this is something that resonates with viewers and listeners, and see if we can continue with that or not. But I would encourage you again to, if you have not been looking at these videos, just go to the YouTube channel for Texas Magician. That's youtube.com/Texas Magician, and you will just subscribe to the podcast, or I should say subscribe to the YouTube channel there, and then you'll be notified whenever that we have new episodes that will be coming out that you can view. Of course, if you have not already subscribed to this podcast, there are several ways that you can do that to wherever you get your podcasts, I'm sure. One more thing before we get into this week's episode. We had a contest starting a couple of weeks ago for a free registration to the Atlanta Harvest of Magic that was offered by Ken Scott. Well, we've had the drawing, and if you'll hang around until after this episode is over, on the backside, we will announce the winner of that contest. So stick around and hear who won. Well, as I said, let's jump into the conversation that we're having here this week with our guest. Again, Suzanne is someone you should have seen, you should have been aware of for quite some time, and has just been doing a really great job for a long number of years, and she is willing to share so much. And she also, again, having worked restaurants, gives us a lot of really good tips towards the end of this podcast on how to work restaurants and taking tips and everything. But I'm not going to say too much more. I'm going to let her say it in her own words. So please welcome my guest this week, Suzanne the Magician, here on The Magic Word. Today I have with me a fabulous magician, someone from Minneapolis, Minnesota, someone who I know that you have seen or heard perhaps live, or been watching her videos, have seen her perhaps on her DVD, may have seen her live perhaps again at the Magic Castle. Her DVD is one of the most popular selling DVDs, I think, through Penguin Magic, but you can buy that through Penguin. It's fantastic, which is her Castle Magic Castle Act. And she actually is a winner in 2010, that she was the winner of the Close-Up Magician of the Year from the Academy of Magical Arts back there in the Magic Castle, as well as having a very long run as the house magician at one of the local restaurants there in Minneapolis, and also that she and I share another common bond of acting as a consultant for a friend of ours who is an author, Mr. John Gaspard, who is also a friend of the Magic Board. We'll talk about that in just a moment then, too. Please welcome my very good friend, Suzanne the Magician. Suzanne, hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. It's good to see your face.
It's great to see you then, too. I'm so glad to have you on the podcast here this week. I forgot also, and one of the more important things, too, is that you were on Penn & Teller and Fool Them as well.
Yep, yeah.
And I think that was just a phenomenal experience because, and we had talked about that then a little bit from before, I think, when you and I were on the phone just chatting, but basically where you had come up with this idea called a mother's love, and you had this trick, and that, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Tell us a little bit about being on Penn & Teller, and what was that like, and how did that evolve?
It was an amazing experience. I didn't expect it to be like it was. I was actually terrified.
I think most people would be.
I worked for, Johnny Thompson called me in January of, I think it was 2015 that I did that, the episode I was on. And I had until April to get this piece ready. So I had been doing this piece that I called A Mother's Love for since about 99, maybe. And so then, and then 2015, Johnny Thompson contacted me and said, "Hey, will you do Penn & Teller Fool Us for us?" And I said, "Sure, I'd love to do this piece." And I sent him the video of the way that I was doing A Mother's Love, and he said, "Well, it's interesting. This is what I think you're doing, but I'm not really sure." And I went, "Yeah, that's basically what I'm doing." And he said, "Well, it looks good, but that's not going to fool them because I see you ditching something right there." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, stop doing that." So that's the counsel he gave me, was stop ditching that. And I said, "Well, that's how the trick works." And he said, "Well, you're smart enough. You can figure it out how to do it without doing that." So I had from January until April to figure it out, and I had the Magic Castle in there. I can't remember when I went, but it was before April. It might have been March. I usually would go out to the castle in March. And I tried all these different permutations, all these different ideas on how to get it to work. And I finally figured it out after I got back from the Magic Castle, after trying all of these different ways. And so I had that, what is that, like 4 or 5 months of working on this piece to change it so that it could fool them. And I sent some practice videos to Doc Eason, and then I had a practice video that I sent to David Regal. And Doc Eason guessed that I was ditching something on the table, which is one of the things that Penn & Teller guessed, which was not what I did.
Yeah.
And then David Regal said, "Oh, I think you're doing like a slate kind of thing, right?" And that was another guess that Penn & Teller had, and that also wasn't what I did. So when they guessed those things in the practice videos, I went, "Oh, I wonder if there's a way that I can accentuate that path Penn & Teller would kind of go down those paths."
Right.
So in timing and in some of the motions that I did, and I wasn't doing like red herring things, but just in the timing and changing the magic moment, really got them to think the same ways that Doc Eason and David Regal were thinking. So I was really glad for their very incorrect guesses.
Wow, that's brilliant. That's a good idea, not only to practice, but then to have some other people who have a good perspective. It's an objective third party to give you an idea, another pair of eyes, basically, who can also kind of give you some feedback or whatever, you know, on that. And then once you have that, that's a good idea then, too. It's like, well, yeah, how can I accentuate that to make sure that that's what they're following along the way then, too. Now, during that time, did they still have you scheduled so this way that you were going to be on their program, or did they say, or did Johnny say, well, you're going to have to, we'll put you on then later. You're going to have to come up with a better idea and then come back then later, or had they already scheduled you?
You know what? They'd already scheduled me, and they would have been, Johnny would have been absolutely fine me doing the trick exactly how it was.
As you submitted first time, yeah.
Right. He said, you just won't fool them with that. Mm-hmm. So, and he said, and you know what? It's not about fooling them anyway. Even though Fool Us is the name of the show, that's mm-hmm. just the hook. We only expect 10 to 15% of the people to fool them. And anybody else, you know, we just want to put on a good magic show. So this will be a good magic trick, and it will be touching and lovely for the show. But if you want to fool them, mm-hmm. then you need to change it.
Right.
So he would have let me on the show.
So you were planning then anyhow. Because I remember talking with Tony Clark. It seems like his was just the opposite. It's kind of like, well, that's not going to work. You're going to need to rework that and come back to us at a later time.
Oh, interesting. That could have been a later
iteration of that, because yours was, what'd you say, 2016? So that was like 5 years ago.
2015. The first season with before they let's see, it was with who was the first host? And I'm blanking on his name.
Was this the guy from England?
Yeah, I don't know why I'm blanking on his name right now.
That's fine. That's fine. And, you know, before we get started, I meant to ask you, by the way, that on a personal note, that your horses, how are your, have you got some horses right now that?
I have one, and I'll send you a picture of her. Her name is Bibi, mm-hmm. and I've had her for just a little over 5 years, or was it 6 years?
Boy, time flies.
Yeah,
I remember when we had talked before.
When I saw you before, mm-hmm. my horse that I had was struck by lightning, and I lost him. That time where we were at the TAOM, mm-hmm. That might have been in 2015. So I've had her since 2015.
Okay.
Since Labor Day, just past Labor Day, because that TAOM convention was right over Labor Day, and that's when my horse Hank was struck by lightning and he died.
Such an odd thing, but I never thought about that, about horses being out in a field, obviously, and they're not around trees or whatever, and they could be struck by lightning. I'm sure that's not an uncommon thing.
They're the highest thing. If they don't come down off the ridge, and he had arthritis in one of his front legs, mm-hmm. and I think it was slippery and he didn't want to go down the ridge, and
wow.
So he just stayed on the ridge and grazed. So, but he died instantly. He still had grass in his mouth and everything.
Holy cow. Wow. Well, I remember whenever that happened and how distraught that you were. And I empathized with you. And that was a very, very difficult time for you then as well. But I'm glad you got a new horse and that gotten back on the horse again.
And she's amazing. I got her when she was a year old. And we've just really grown together. And she's amazing. I'll send you a picture of her.
Yeah, please do. I don't think of Minneapolis as being a rural area, so I assume that you're living kind of outside in one of the burbs?
No, I board her.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah, I am in a burb, but I mean, we just have like a regular house with a regular yard that's big enough for our two dogs to play in. But no, I travel too much, and I don't want to take care of a farm. So I pay somebody to do that for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, and talk about Minneapolis. So that way that you are close enough then where that you can go to the restaurant. And we're going to talk about that for here just a minute. But about John Gaspard, about the books that he's been writing. He's got, I think, the seventh book, which is out now, The Magic Square, by John Gaspard, about the Eli Marks mystery series. And that is just a phenomenal, fun series. And I know that you've been involved.
It is so fun. In fact, I just had just recently recording with him, because he's doing these neat podcasts where he's putting out one chapter of his book once a month or something like that. And mm-hmm. and he's interviewing different magicians. And I wonder if he's interviewed you for that.
But he hasn't yet, but he said that I'm on the list.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Has he spoken with you already? So you've got one in the can with you?
Yeah, just today.
Okay. So coming up soon. So yes, the idea is that if you don't buy the book or don't buy the Audible book, which by the way, the Audible book is phenomenal. The guy who is the voice of the local hockey team there in Minneapolis, yep. I believe. What's his name?
Yep. Jim Cunningham.
Cunningham, that's right.
And John Gaspard and Jim Cunningham and I put on this show, Sunday Night Magic.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah, once a month we put on a magic show and we invite performers to come in and the performer will lecture. And then they'll be part of the show, and then we'll have a couple local people in the show. Mm-hmm. And it's great success, and we have a lot of fun with it. And Jim and John and I we just do it for a labor of love. We don't take any money from it. All mm-hmm. the money goes to the performers.
Is it at all similar to Jeff McBride's Wonderground?
Yeah, I suppose it would be, except for we only have the one theater. I think that they have the stage and the it's kind of like what I would think like Magic Chicago, which isn't there anymore because Chicago Magic Lounge kind of took all the performers. But right. it was like Magic Chicago was the idea that I got it from because I used to do Magic Chicago with Eugene quite often.
Was that the one also that Benjamin Barnes had been working yep. with, Magic Chicago?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Before he started doing Chicago Magic Lounge.
Yeah, because now he's the entertainment director for the Chicago Magic Lounge.
Yep.
Right.
Yep,
right. Yep. Well, I know that you've worked over there at Chicago Magic Lounge. I understand. Mm-hmm. I have been there a few times myself, and it is just a fabulous venue. I saw it at the old place, and then again at the new place, and it's phenomenal.
I love that venue so much. Mm-hmm. It's a really a fantastic venue.
I assume that you are working in that, what is that, the 532 Club or whatever that's behind?
Yep, yeah.
What's that called?
Sam
the Bellhop, whatever that is.
Sam the Bellhop. So it's the 654.
That sounds closer to being right.
Yeah.
I feel embarrassed I can't think of the name right now.
Yeah, same here. I can look it up on a thing yeah. while we're chatting. I've got a picture of it, I believe.
Okay.
I think it's the 654 Club. You know, we are going to be banned from the magic community for not knowing that, you know?
Yeah, because that should be something that we would know. I mean, not just because of the name of the club, but because of the Sam the Bellhop, and we're both close-up magicians.
we should know this, right? Right, yep.
Exactly. Well, have you ever worked then on the stage or only just in that close-up room?
So far, I've only worked in the close-up room, mm-hmm. but Ben is trying to get me on the stage. He's pretty sure that my act, the way the stage is, that my act would be fine on the stage.
Have you developed a show that is a stand-up kind of a show, or are you talking about just having a table on the stage?
Yeah, just having a table on the stage and like my cups and balls and the card stuff. I mean, other people do card stuff on there.
True.
And I could add in like my cards across and stuff like that. So I can do some bigger stuff. I wouldn't be able to do like coin things. That would might be too small. But
yeah, they really don't have image magnifiers, any kind of big screens or anything there. I recall whenever Johnny Ace Palmer had won FISM in the Grand Prix, and I was there, and to see him on stage seemed kind of amazing that such a small thing. Of course, they had these IMAGs that you could see, but there were thousands of us in the audience. And the fact that he actually won doing close-up was pretty amazing. I think he was the first close-up guy to have won. I could see that being something that from that kind of a stage that people can see, because it is a pretty intimate theater there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And the sight lines are great.
And they have that upstairs for some of the VIPs. Yep. I guess you can kind of look down and see then as well, which you would have to worry about, I think, with some of your sight lines because of those people up there who can look down. You think?
Nope, I just ran through my show. I don't think there's only one thing would be the cups and balls if they could see inside the box. Mm-hmm. Because that might kind of destroy something that's coming up. But that just...
I think it's as much of an angle that that really wouldn't be a deterrent necessarily.
I don't think that would be an issue.
What about the House of Cards? Have you ever been down to the House of Cards in
Nashville? I haven't, but I totally want to go. I've been talking to Joey.
Good.
I just haven't had the opportunity to travel lately. Mm-hmm. I've got a few right now. I'm having a few health issues that is making it a little hard for me to travel for mm-hmm. Long periods of time. Like I wouldn't be healthy enough to work the castle right now, but I'm getting there.
Good.
The castle is probably the ultimate marathon. I don't know how many nights you need to be scheduled to work House of Cards, but I know Chicago Magic Lounge is only 3 nights.
I think for the most part, that's the same thing at the House of Cards. Although I'm pretty sure that they're open every night of the week for dinner, and they do have a small close-up area. It's really not ideal. Matter of fact, it's about the worst performing conditions for a close-up person. But they also, I think, have a few people do some things at the bar from time to time. But as far as the stage performances, I don't think that's 7 nights a week. I may be wrong on that. But,
I could do something that's only 2 or 3 nights, but yeah. I think working the castle for me right now, I'm probably a year out yet from mm-hmm. being healthy enough to do that.
Yeah. And have you ever worked any of the other rooms or always just the close-up gallery?
I've only worked the close-up gallery, and I've had other people say, oh, you should branch out, you should do other stuff. And, you know, I love close-up, and mm-hmm. I would be settling. For me personally, I would be settling to work the other rooms just to say that I did.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something about close up that just thrills me, and the other stuff is like, yeah, I'll do that for corporate.
Yeah.
But I would never work the castle with my corporate stand up act.
I think that's the most part. I would agree with that for most magicians. It seems that we would not be presenting our corporate show, because a lot of things that we do to other magicians might seem like standard lines or some things that we might say or do. And when you go to the castle, you're expecting something different and new that most magicians haven't seen or heard before.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem, I think, that if you have an expectation, or I should say a perception of your abilities, so that whenever that you actually perform, that you're not going to meet the expectations. And I have those kinds of fears sometimes. I've talked with Banachek about that. He said there are some times that I really don't want to perform someplace because they expect certain things, and I don't think I can live up to that expectation. And I'm not as well known. I'm no Banachek by any means as far as performance level. But I think that we all have things that we feel like that we do and we're successful in doing, but a little bit shy in showing that to magicians.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, my corporate people like my act,
sure,
but the corporate people also have never seen Invisible Deck. So
very good point. Or Sponge Bunnies or whatever.
Right. Exactly. But people who frequent the Magic Castle, and I'm not even talking just the magicians, mm-hmm. I'm talking about like lay members of the castle, they've seen it all.
Sure.
And if you don't have a special spin on it, like I don't know if you've ever seen Matt Marcy's PowerPoint trick.
I have not.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, if you find Matt Marcy's PowerPoint trick on Penn and Teller Fool Us,
mm-hmm.
and if you're a magician, you'll know what he did, but it's so creative and so clever. And that would be, if I was going to do that trick, and I won't say what the trick is.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all are going to have to figure it out for yourself. But if I was going to do that trick, I would want to do it in that most clever way instead of the almost out of the box way.
Sure. That reminds me, I recently attended the Magic Inc. benefit that they were having online, and they had a lot of performers on there. And the one that I thought was an outstanding hit to me was Paige Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
She did something that was basically an oil and water, but she had her fingernails painted black and red, you know, black on one hand and red the other. And the way that she would put the cards down, then put her hands on top of that and then interlaced her fingers and to show that this mental image that, yes, they are interlaced black and red. And then she would take her hands apart and wave and then spread them. And then they went back to red and black. It's like beautiful. I mean,
there's nothing. Yeah, that was very creative.
Yeah, very creative. Very creative idea. And so she really impressed me. Something that a man, I don't think I could get away with in doing, but it makes perfect sense. I mean, you could have a woman can have her fingernails painted that way, red and black, and do a regular act, and maybe not even ever do that trick. But when you do, then it all comes together, and people go, ah, that makes sense.
Yep.
You know that that I like that aspect of it then too. Yeah, I was going to just finish up with John Gaspard, that's been interesting and kind of journey that he's had then with the books. And so I think it's going to be kind of fun what he's doing. I was about to say that if you have not listened to the books or purchased any of the books, that you could listen to those chapters of what you're talking about that he's going to be doing. And eventually that if you listen to all of them, you will hear the whole book. But it's going to take a number of months before it always comes together.
Yeah.
And it's better that you go out and buy the book or buy the Audible for that.
Yeah, the Audible version is fantastic because Jim Cunningham does a beautiful job narrating it. And he's got a different voice for each person. And they're both my friends. So, of course, I'm going to say the book is fantastic and Jim does a great job. But I'm not lying. I've listened to every single one of them and I keep bugging John to write another one, man. I need another one.
And I was going to also ask you about you had confirmed that it was Penguin that had done your DVDs. Have you done a Penguin live lecture, and is that what the DVD was?
No, the DVD was actually done by my friend Anthony Mazzi, who is a magician himself, but he's also a producer of he loves horror films. So
really?
He's got documentaries out there about horror. So if you look up Anthony Mazzi, M-A-S-I. So he's got a production company called the Black Rabbit series. I think that's what it's called. And I'm in that series along with Eric Jones and El Ropo and Will Fern and Jonathan Levitt, and Anthony's got his out there, and Hannibal's got one, and there might be one more, and I am sorry if I missed it. That might be the whole series, but I think it's Black Rabbit Magic Series or Black Rabbit Series. And then because digital downloads have gotten more popular than DVDs, we went through Penguin, and you can get my Magic Castle series as a digital download from them, or you can get the DVD from me. I've got a bunch of them, so contact me.
How would they get hold of you?
Suzanne@suzmagic.com. So it's
that's S-U-Z.
suzanne@suzmagic.com. Get a hold of me and then I can sign the DVD and send it out.
But that was recorded at the castle. So your castle act was from the recorded at the castle. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, we did it down in the Peller Theater.
Oh, the Peller. It wasn't in the gallery.
Right. It was in the Peller because Levitt filmed his at the same time.
Oh.
So we did four instances, so I'd do a show, then he'd do a show, then he'd do a show, and I'd do a show so that the audience that was in there would have, because we had four different audiences, so and they'd have a different feel, whoever opened, and then we took the best of what we came up with.
Right, so when you did a Penguin lecture, did you do that at Penguin, or is that just...
That one was at Penguin with Dan Harlan being the host.
So it's separate material on that one, so they're completely different on both.
The some of the tricks might be the same, but on the Penguin lecture, there were some other things that I added in because I talked about restaurant magic as opposed to my castle act.
Right. Was that just a one DVD or on that? Because it seems like your Castellect, I think, and I've got those. I think there are two of those, right?
Yeah, the Castellect is two DVDs. So the first DVD is the performance itself. Mm-hmm. So you could hand that DVD to a friend and say, hey, this is a great magic show just for you to watch, because you're not a magician. You don't want to know how it works.
Right.
You can watch it. And then also on that, there's a way to listen to commentary. So when you watch the show, you can watch it just as entertainment, or you can watch it with my commentary of what was going on in my head at the time. So like I mm-hmm. said, this line this way because Mark, my helper, did this,
right,
for example.
Right.
So that gives you kind of a backstage pass to my brain of what's going on in my head, because he was very drunk. And
you mean the director or the cameraman or who?
My helper.
Oh, your helper. Okay.
Was very drunk. And I've got a story about that, by the way.
Okay.
So Mark, the helper, was extremely drunk, and so I was putting out fires left and right with him.
Yeah.
And so it really speaks to how a restaurant performer, which I do a lot of restaurant work, and have done restaurant magic since I started in the middle 80s. I've always had at least one restaurant, if not three restaurants.
Uh-huh.
So how a restaurant performer can take the skill that they learned in a restaurant setting and put that in a formal magic show, and how I can really think on my feet because of my restaurant experience.
Right.
So you get that in the commentary.
Right.
Understanding what I'm thinking when working with this really, really drunk guy. I loved working with him. He was such a hoot.
I had someone who I had called up on stage one time during my show, one of my shows, on a corporate event, and that lady was very drunk. And as I was doing it, I could see people around me, or who I could see from the stage, that were seated in the audience saying, "No, not her.
Don't pick her."
Exactly. And I thought, well, I knew that she was a little, not just two sheets, but she was three sheets to the wind over there. And so yeah. I brought her up, and she stumbled up on stage and everything. And I think the important advice that I would give people when they do work with someone, regardless of how inebriated they might be, is to treat them even with more respect, you know,
yes.
because they're the situation, and it's an easy target, obviously, to make fun of, and they'll forget
yep.
the next morning. But that's the worst thing that possibly that a magician can do, or
exactly.
entertain with someone on stage who is like that. So you give them as much respect as you can, and you don't need to say anything as far as things that how they respond to certain questions. If you ask them something easy, and you ask them their name, for an example, and they just kind of glaze over, and you just kind of look at the audience, just the side looks that you can give the audience, kind of like, well, you know, you wish you were on stage instead of me asking these questions, and they just laugh at the situation and not the person. And I think that that's
right.
a very important distinction to make sure that is the situation, that the person is not the brunt of the joke.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's something that I lecture on, is always being as respectful as you can to your audience participant, no matter what, because
right.
they're up there to help you do a good show.
Mm-hmm.
And if you berate them or are mean to them while you're doing the show, then you're getting the audience to laugh at their expense. And why would anybody ever want to come up and help you again?
Exactly.
If you're getting people to laugh at their expense.
And equally or more importantly is that you're making it bad, not only for you in that situation, but perhaps for you in ever working for that company or anyone else who is out there. And
exactly.
that it's bad
yep.
for magic in general, saying, "Oh, I saw this magician the other night and they made fun of this person or me or whatever. And I'm never going to hire a magician for my show." Not
exactly.
just for me,
exactly.
but for all magicians in general. So.
Yep. I had this experience, if you'd like to have a little story on exactly that.
I do.
I had this experience. I was working at one of my restaurants, and a friend of mine brought out like 15 people. So there were 16 people at this table, 15 of her friends and her.
Mm-hmm.
And before they before their dinner came, I went and started to perform for them. And I stood in between this one woman to my right and this one guy to my left. And my opener, I usually pick the person on the right. I'm sorry, the person on my left, because angles are better and just kind of the way the trick works, it works better for that person. But it could really work for anybody, but that's the person I prefer. So I said hello to everybody. I address this person. I address that person. And I handed the deck to that guy, and he scooted his chair back like really far, and he went, "I don't help magicians." And I just went, "Oh, okay." And I took the cards and I put it, "You do it."
Yeah.
And I didn't do the regular, "Oh, come on, you'll love it. Come on, do it."
Right.
"Ha, ha, ha, he doesn't want to help. What, are you scared?" I didn't do any of that because that's mean. Right. So I just respected his boundary that he set and went, "Oh, okay, you help me." And every now and then, I mean, I even would put my shoulder to him. Mm-hmm. Because he obviously shut off his whole body to me by going like, so I even put my shoulder to him and I went, "Yeah, okay, you help me." So she helped me and everybody laughed and had a good time. And every now and then I'd kind of peek over my shoulder at him and give him a little wink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in on it now because,
right,
you know, I know he's not seeing anything, but he's
missing out on the fun.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't missing out on the fun, though. That's the cool part. He was still having fun. He just wasn't the center of attention.
I see.
So I finished the whole thing. I'd address him every now and then just with a wink and not drawing attention to him or anything, but letting him know that I knew that he was still there and that I wasn't going to mess with him.
Sure.
So then food came and I left. And then they ate. And I was doing other tables. They got their dessert. They called me back. So I decided not to walk all the way around the table and stand in between the two people I stood before.
Yeah, right, right.
I stood on this other side right across from him. And he said, "Hey, hey, before you start, I just want to thank you."
Hmm.
And I went, "Oh, for what?" And he said, "For being so nice, because I've been around magicians before who were so mean and made fun of everybody, and they made everybody feel uncomfortable, and that is why I didn't want to help you. And if you will come back over here by me, I want to help you."
How nice. Wow.
So I knew that was how people felt. But to have somebody actually say it and reinforce that for me, it was like, yeah, okay, I feel then that I, for me, am on the right track.
That's nice that you were working in a restaurant situation where that you can circle back again to the table, as opposed to sometimes when you're working on stage and you're trying to call on a volunteer. And well, first of all, if they're coming to a magic show, they know they're getting in for something. But a right. lot of times, of course, at a restaurant, you're like a wandering mariachi, that you're just kind of imposing yourself on a table when you come up
right.
to somebody. I recall similar situation somewhat when working a restaurant once, and there was a gentleman and a lady at the table, and I came over and introduced myself. And the lady was very into it and said, "Yes, I really want to see some magic." And he said, "I don't," got up and left. I mean, he went to the bathroom and actually left. And it's like, well, she's interested and he's not, so I'm just going to perform for her. And I continued, and I was probably into about my third trick. And about 5 minutes later, this guy comes back and he said, "You still here?" And kind of put his hands on his hips and just threw some cash on the table as if to say, "I'm not going to sit down until you take this cash if that's what it's going to take to get you out of here."
Wow.
So I
yeah, never, he just didn't like it.
Apparently, he must have had a really bad experience, or it could be that they were, you know, if they were in a conversation, I mean, it could have been a very serious conversation. Maybe they're getting ready to divorce, or maybe a cancer, you know, or they're talking about a medical issue, I mean, or job issues, or whatever it is. Or I have no idea. But as you know, when you approach a table and you ask someone, would you like to see some, it's, they will often say, now's not a good time. Can you come back later? Obviously, we respect that. And you do. And they can ask for you if you want, or otherwise you avoid that table. But that didn't even have the chance. Or this guy just said, nope, don't want it, don't like it, and he left. So it's like, wow. She did. So that, how would you handle a situation? Same way? I guess you would have still performed for her, but.
You know, I've never had that situation where the person said no and just got up and left. I have had, like, I don't typically approach a couple. I would wait for the couple to request me, mm-hmm. because a couple is usually on a date or something like that. So I personally don't approach a couple. I've got enough people to perform for without that. I usually go for bigger groups because they're going to be louder and they're going to be more, it's going to be more lively. And so then other people will request.
Mm-hmm.
If I approach a table of four or more people and I say who I am and that, do they want to see some magic? If one person at the table says no, but everybody else is going like, yeah, I'll say, well, I don't want to impose on this one person. So, you know, if this one person really doesn't want to see magic, mm-hmm. I can go. And then, you know, if you want to talk him into seeing it, then I'll come back.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to impose myself on one person. But usually when I say that, the person will go, oh, it's fine. I'll just whatever. And yeah. then I perform, like, my first trick will win them over.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And I can win them over. And usually after that, I ask them, what was your reasoning for saying no? And usually I'll get, because I've seen magic before and I just feel so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Magic makes me feel stupid.
I've heard that.
And I said, did you feel stupid when I was playing with you? And he said, no, he would say, no.
Yeah.
But, and then sometimes I would get, you know, I've seen magicians who were really mean and you were not.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to, again, not be that rude person for such a variety of reasons, which leads me then to the question that what would be, do you have a specific opening trick when you would approach a table, or does it vary as to the night, the group, the number of people, the ambiance, or do you have a standard opener?
My opener is almost always my blank card trick.
Oh, it's a great trick. I remember you were explaining that on Real Magic, I think on Cosmo one time. I was with you.
Yeah.
I think I might have been volunteer when you were teaching that trick. It's a great trick.
Yeah, you might have. So the reason that is my opener, it's actually quite calculated. Because I play it off as if the cards are just regular cards. And I hand them out and say, here, shuffle these. And it takes them a little bit, not very long, but to realize that they're blank because they're in the spotlight now,
mm-hmm.
and they're going, oh yeah, I'm shuffling cards. Are people judging me shuffling? And then they go, oh wait, these are blank. That gives this, we're going to do something serious.
Yeah.
And then, oh wait a second, this isn't serious at all.
Yeah.
And so it lowers their expectations to some extent. And so I sort of set the bar low. So it doesn't take much for me to get over it.
Right.
But it also shows them that I don't take myself too seriously, that I'm not going to be one of those magicians that does a one up on them. I want to be on the same level as them. I don't want to be above them.
Okay.
And
you want to show that they're there for having a good time, having dinner. And when you walk up the table, you want to immediately be their friend and have a good time with them.
Exactly. Exactly. I've always looked at my magic in a way that it's like I'm a kid on a playground and there are a bunch of kids I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I have a really fun toy And it's a really, like a ball or whatever, really fun toy. And I want to play with them. And I go up, hey, I've got this really fun toy. Do you want to play with me with this toy? And that's what I want my magic to come off as, is that I'm just this other kid going around and I want to play with you guys. And we're all on the same level. And that's it.
Wow.
And I have my, and my toy happens to be magic.
That's a great approach to the table or for magic in general about how that you want to present that. As long as that you have that inside narrative that you're telling yourself as you're going up to the table that, hey, I just am here to have fun, that I'm not here to fool them. I'm here to have fun with them and for them to enjoy the ride as well. Are you big on remembering people's names? I mean,
I really try to do it, and I usually can remember it for the time that I'm at the table.
Me too. I've got a short memory right there. I mean, I can remember everybody for the evening. Next day, I forget them, but that evening I can remember everybody's name.
Yeah. Now, I do have a great skill of remembering the parties that I go to. Hmm. So, like, somebody will say, oh, yeah, we had you at, this is like, I haven't done little kids' birthday parties in forever.
We have a lot in common there.
Yeah.
We're just doing corporate things.
I did them a lot in the beginning.
Yeah, me too. I did hundreds.
Yeah. And so I will have people come up to me at the restaurant that I am doing now and say, oh, my gosh, you were at my daughter's 8th birthday and she's in her 30s now.
Yeah.
And this is where it was, and this is one thing that happened. And I'd go, oh, yeah, I remember that party. And then I could say something else about the party. And that makes them think that I've got a great memory. But, no, I'm just able to put myself in another place and remember the place. But I don't remember the names of the people. I don't remember how many people were there.
Sure. But I think equally important to that person is that it personalizes that. In other words, that I wasn't just another pebble of sand on the beach, that there was something important. And the fact that you remembered the event, regardless of whether it was the names or anything, you might say, oh, yeah, I remember that you had a beautiful dining room and you had a picture on the wall, or that we did in front of the fireplace, you know, in your dining room or your living room or whatever. Then it's like, oh, yes. For an example, that one of the things that I do, it's a little tip that whenever I run into someone or they run into me and they recognize that I'm a magician, is they will say, hey, do you remember me, that you had me as a volunteer on your stage or at a restaurant or wherever? And obviously that we do so many that it's like, but you have to make them feel special. And so I say, and I always throw out a name. I don't care. Is your name Stephen? Said, no, it's Nicholas or something. Oh, well, I knew it had a vowel in it. So again, it's a little joke. They laugh. But the point is that I've made an attempt at trying to remember their name. And sometimes 50-50, you know, I could actually, it's no, not Stephen, it's Steve or Stefan, or, you know, it's something that's kind of close to that.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, I was off by a little bit, but I always use that. It's like, I knew there was a vowel in it, and it gets a joke, and then we get on a rapport. It's kind of like, well, he must remember the event. And then we go on talking about something, but it makes the person feel special because that I, quote, remembered them. And so I think that makes them feel special.
Right.
About this opportunity. They've met a celebrity, for lack of other word, someone that they saw perform once for them.
Sometimes I can remember, like if I've met them at the restaurant, sometimes I can remember about where they were sitting.
Hmm.
So like I can go, oh, yeah, that's right. You were sitting at that one round table by that thing.
That's great.
And they'll go, oh, you've got a great memory. Actually, probably not, but.
Now, you've been working at, you said earlier, several different restaurants, but there's one you've been working at for at least over a decade, I assume.
Let's see. I did have one steakhouse that I worked at for like 14 years.
That was the one I'm thinking, I guess.
Yeah, then that's Gianni Steakhouse. Then the owner of that sold the place, and the new owner loved the magic. She just didn't like the idea of paying me.
So if you want to work for tips, there you go.
Right. Well, she thought that I was making enough in tips and making enough in contacts that she didn't have to pay me. But no, that's not how this works. So I went and now, so that would have been, boy, 2008. Or 2000, between 2000, I'm just doing this because of
other things you're trying to peg that to.
Other events that happened in my life that were right around the time that I left. So around 2007, 2008 was when I stopped working there. And then I started working at a place called Birch's in Long Lake. And then Birch's moved. Now they're called Birch's on the Lake. And I'm still with them. And then about 2 years after that, I started working at a place called Lord Fletcher's Old Lake Lodge. Mm-hmm. And they have two places. They have Lord Fletcher's and they have Rockwood's. So I'm working at Birch's on the Lake, Lord Fletcher's Old Lake Lodge, and Rockwood's.
Are those family-type restaurants or are they steakhouses up
Fern and Brass? They're upscale places. Now, kids do come with the families, sure. So there are some kids there, but mostly they're upscale places. Especially Lord Fletcher's is very upscale.
Do you have a policy on accepting tips?
I accept them, and I know there's a big debate about it.
Right.
I had long conversations with Eugene Berger about whether to accept tips or not. He said never accept tips. Now, I'm wondering how much of that is cultural, because in Minnesota, where I am, if you don't accept the tip, that's kind of viewed as an insult.
Hmm.
And I don't care what the tip is. If it's a dollar, then I say thank you just as much as if it's $100, I will say thank you.
Right.
The parents teach their kids to tip.
Really?
Yeah.
So they hand the money to the kids and they bring it to you?
Yep. So they'll give a $5 to each one of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the show, the kids will give me the fives. In fact, sometimes the kids will give me a $5 and a hug, warms my heart.
I remember many times where that the child will be coming over from another table. And that way that they're handing me money at that point.
And I love that.
Yeah, because this table gets the idea. It's like, oh, I guess I should get my money out for a tip.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, so I accept them. If somebody there is a tricky thing, though.
Hmm.
Sometimes people will say, are we supposed to tip you? And I'll go, oh, no, no. The house pays me. I am well compensated.
Right.
If you want to tip, I wouldn't turn it down. But no, you don't have to.
No obligation.
No obligation. And then they'll usually still tip me after. But sometimes they'll go, we don't have any money at all. Can we tip you on the credit card? And I say, you don't have to tip me at all. That's fine. And then they'll sometimes tip me on the credit card.
I've had that on the rare occasion also, in which that I'll come back then the next week and the waiters will say, hey, this was added on last week's bill and this was some money that was designated to go to you that they put down magic or something.
Yep.
It was a place I went to in Indiana. It wasn't Illusions in Carmel, but it was someplace else. And that I remember that on the bill that it said tip, but they also wrote another thing underneath there because the standard form would say for the total tax and then tip or whatever. But they actually wrote magic tip on there. So this way that you could actually leave something for the magician specifically. So, but it's handwritten saying magic tip or tip for magicians, whatever that was. Thought that was kind of unusual. Way of handling it. One of the things that I found as far as to get a tip and at all is to signal that this is going to be your last trick. So this way, if people are going to be giving you money, now's the time to be reaching in their pocket. Specifically, you're going to say, well, listen, there's one more thing I'd like to show you guys. I really haven't shown anyone else. This is very special, but this has been a great time. I've enjoyed my time with you guys here at this table. And so I've been saving this. Let me show you this last thing. And then I've got this other table I've got to go over.
Oh.
And so this way that they do feel special, and they realize that they've had a pretty good show. And so if whoever is going to be the alpha in the group that's going to be reaching in their pocket, now's the time to do it. If you don't, then that's fine too. But I'm just, that's all you have to do, just that little signal. Because otherwise, for the longest time, I was just saying, thank you and good night. And then I walk someplace else, and they're, you know, scrambling for their pockets, and they may or may not eventually send somebody over to the table to give me something. But if they, but a lot of times it's like, oh, it's too late. I'm, you know, I'll just, she doesn't take tips. So.
That's actually a great idea. I don't do that because for a few reasons, but if you've got a set that's just the right size and that you can say, oh, this is the last thing. I do like this one card set.
Yeah.
That kind of
as
one
arc.
Thing plays into the other thing.
Yeah.
And then the food might come in there. But this, oh, okay. So this is the difference of what I do. I have an opener. I have an opening, like, approach. And then I have an exit thing that I say. So I have an approach thing that I say and an exit thing that I say. And while I'm saying the exit thing, it's almost long enough for them to get a tip out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not very long, but it doesn't require much.
That's right.
Because if they've got in their head, oh, I'm going to tip her, mm-hmm. they're real close to having it anyway. And
that's right.
And if they ask, oh, are we supposed to tip you within that time? That's when I go, no, don't.
Right. Right.
Because if they've got to ask, I don't want their money anyway.
Exactly. Right. And you were saying you would take $1 bill to $100 bill. I'm just the opposite. I remember once that somebody, after I was finished, this lady held up a $1 bill as if it was a banner and saying, just a $1 bill, say, do you accept tips? And she was well-dressed, could easily afford, I could tell a lot more than that. And I'll say, no, I'm paid by the restaurant here, and so it's not necessary. Thank you very much. You can keep that. It's like,
oh, and you know, and I don't get that. I don't get that very often to where they'd hold up what they're going to give me and ask.
No, that was a rare occasion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually what happens is somebody will have the bill in their hand, like palming it in their
like
hand.
A handshake. Exactly.
Or they'll just put the bill in my pocket.
Hmm.
So sometimes the bill is one when I pull it out of the pocket and go, oh, they could have kept that.
Yeah.
Or it's 100 and I go, oh, that's really nice.
Right. That's always an unexpected pleasure. I remember one night that I was pretty much finished, and I was about to go home and saw there was an elderly gentleman, elderly like my age, with obviously his grandchild who was there. There's the two of them. And I thought, well, I'm going to show him one last thing before I leave. And so it was winding down at the end of the evening. And I went over and did something, probably didn't spend more than 5 to 8 minutes, maybe did three tricks. And he gave me a $100 bill. And I thought, I should have done a lot more, but I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting anything. I just was going to do a trick, make him smile. And he said, you made our evening. Thanks a lot. Here. Like, holy cow, you just never know.
Yeah. Well, you gave them what they wanted. So that's great.
Yeah, that's
right. So this is what I do when I leave the table or before I leave the table. I take out my business card and I say, I'll leave you with one of these. Let's say I'm working at Fletcher's. I'll say I'm here pretty much every Saturday night. And boy, it's weird to try to get into that closer when I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So my name again is Suzanne. So that gives them my name again. I'll leave you one of these. I give them my card. I'm here pretty much every Saturday. So that tells them that I'm there, but I'm not always there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I say, I'm here pretty much every Saturday unless I'm not. And then I'm performing at a different show.
Right. Right. For a private party, kind of letting them know that you do those.
And then that gives them the idea that I'm doing another show.
Right.
And that is long enough for them to get the idea, oh, we could tip her. But this is an important thing that I say, and I recommend anybody doing restaurants say this. If you enjoyed the magic, please tell the host on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they could have had the time of their lives. And if you don't say that, by the time the night is over, they will forget to tell the host on the way out. But if you tell them, please tell the host on the way out, they'll go, oh, that's right, I've got to tell the host. Mm-hmm. And almost always they tell the host on the way out. And what and why this is important, the management most likely will see that people are having a good time. Most likely will hear that people have come back to see you specifically. But if they get people saying, oh, my God, the magician was amazing on the way out. People coming in hears, oh, the magician was amazing. The host is going, yeah, the magician is amazing. Oh, my gosh, all these people are saying the magician is amazing. The host tells the management it's invaluable.
Right.
I have had the manager come up and say, man, we have so many people coming up and saying how great you are. And sometimes it bugs me. And sometimes I say, yeah, I know. She's amazing. That's why she's here. But they see me as invaluable because of how many people are coming up and saying how amazing I am. Yeah. Well, it proves my worth, basically.
Right, right. Well, that's a good way to end this, I think. Then also a lot of great tips and everything, and working at restaurants then as well, because there are a lot of us who do those kinds of venues and the opportunities that you can get. So good words, good advice. Well, as we start to wrap up, though, over here, I want to remind you that the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast, and I always like to close by asking my guests what it is that is their philosophy of life. What is your word or words? What is it that's important to you? What do you live by?
Wow. This is going to sound really silly, but, and it doesn't always work, but follow your bliss. So,
I like that.
Yeah. So if you're doing something that you hate, and it, you get up in the morning and you go, oh, God, I hate doing this. Ah. See if, one, there's something else that you can do that you love, or two, find out what you can love about that thing that you can hate, because hating the thing is bringing you pain.
Right. Well, so that makes sense, certainly. Then it kind of reminds me then as well, going back to the restaurants, whenever I will go into the restaurant, I put a smile on my face and I leave everything outside. As I'm walking in, I cleanse my brain, basically saying, these people are going to have a great time and I'm going to be the person giving them that good time.
Exactly. I can show up to work and be in the most foul, awful mood and not want to be there. But the moment I step into that restaurant and I put a smile on, my entire mood changes. And by the time I'm done working, my mood has 100% changed around.
Same thing whenever you're working on stage, to be back behind the curtain or before that you walk out there, to smile to the audience, to let them know that you love them and that they will love you back. Again, if you have that conviction that will show. It's the same thing when you're talking on the telephone. If you smile while you're talking on the telephone, that smile will come across the phone.
Oh, absolutely does. Because it changes your whole physicality.
Yeah.
So.
That's exactly right. Well, Suzanne, this has been great. I've enjoyed our conversation over here. This has been nothing short of than wonderful, and a lot of really great advice. And it's good catching up with you then again after so many years that we just don't get together to talk often enough, it seems like. So, again, people who are wanting to take to buy your DVDs, they'll go to suzanne@suzmagic.com. Send you an email or two. I guess, can they buy it through the website at suzmagic.com or?
I only have like my corporate magic. So you just email me.
Just email.
And and I'll get back with you. And I also do like coaching over Zoom and private lessons over Zoom.
I understand.
So if you'd like And I've got my Cups and Balls routine now is out there for if you want to have private lessons and learn that entire routine. Oh. I would recommend coming up with your own script for it. My script is really kind of my script, but
of course.
But I can certainly help with the routining and all of that. So all of that is out there. Because by the way, the Cups and Balls performance is on the DVD, on the Magic Castle DVD, but I don't teach it on that because I didn't have Al Schneider's permission to teach the final load at the time, but now I have his permission to teach the final load. So
because he was one of your early mentors. And
he was my initial mentor, yeah.
Yeah, and for people who may not know him, he's the one who, of course, created Matrix, the coin Matrix.
Matrix, yep. Yeah, he's got amazing stuff out there. If you go to World Magic. Boy, I can't remember his website. Just do a Google search or just do a search on YouTube for Al Schneider. Mm-hmm. And then he has a YouTube channel. Watch the stuff on his YouTube channel. He's got some stuff on there that he's like working on. That's like he's just trying to do some creative things. That man is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Absolutely brilliant.
He's one of the people I think who fly under the radar for most magicians that they don't know about or hear about, or they might have heard the name, but he's kind of been in the background. I took a workshop from him, the very first workshop in magic I ever had attended. I want to say 1978, '79, somewhere in there. It has stuck with me still to this day. The things that he taught that were amazing.
Yeah. He's absolutely brilliant. So if you'd like to learn some of the stuff that I got from Al, is that Cups and Balls routine, and then I do workshops and private classes.
Just need to drop you an email.
Yep, just drop me an email.
Sounds great, Suzanne. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and attention, your words and friendship. It's been wonderful to reconnect.
Oh, thank you. It's great seeing you again, man.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Suzanne the Magician. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Suzanne. That was really a wonderful conversation. I certainly enjoyed the chance to get caught up and have a great conversation there and learn a few things myself. And I hope that those who are listening also enjoyed it and learned a few things as well. Also, just as a reminder to all the listeners, if you are interested in contacting Suzanne and learning how that she can perhaps help your act or give you a little bit of coaching or whatever, she has a world of experience and certainly would be well worth your time. Someone that you should talk to. You can drop her an email at Suzanne@SuzMagic, like the title of this episode, at Suze with a Z. So it's Suzanne at SuzMagic, SuzMagic.com. Well, earlier in the episode, we mentioned that there was a contest that Ken Scott started a couple of weeks ago when we had his episode. Specifically, he is the president and organizer of the Atlanta Harvest of Magic this year, which will be taking place September the 30th through October the 2nd. And he had offered a free registration. And we had several who had entered the contest, but unfortunately, just like others, we just can only award one person to be the winner. And so it's time to announce that winner's name. And that person is Joe Miller. Congratulations. Ken will reach out to you and give you the information that you need in order to get registered for the convention. And if it gets delayed or postponed, that will take place then in the following year in 2022. And that registration will be good for that year then as well to postpone it for a year. Well, before we close, one last thing I want to remind everybody to be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/TexasMagician. And there, again, as I mentioned earlier, you will see some of the videos that we've been posting from this podcast. So this way you can kind of see the people I talk to and kind of I want to get your feedback as to something, if this is something that you want me to continue to pursue for a few more weeks at least, or I'm not certain how long in the future we'll continue to do that. But it's just something that I think is kind of fun and would like to have your feedback. Speaking of feedback, I want to remind you again to post your 5-star comments on iTunes for this podcast so we can help this podcast grow. And be sure to subscribe to the Pod Letter so you know who's going to be on from week to week and some suggestions from the archives. Speaking of next week, of course, you notice that this is episode number 599, and next week will be episode number 600. And that episode will feature someone who is well-known internationally, has been around in magic for quite some time, and you will absolutely enjoy. And what the heck? You guys are friends, and I appreciate you listening, so I may as well tell you right now, our guest next week will be none other than the man himself, Max Maven. Yep, that's right. Max is going to be our guest, and so be sure to tune in and listen to that one. I know that you will enjoy it. It was a great conversation we had, and what a guy. Man, it was some fun. And so, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to follow your bliss. This is Scotty out.